It's KCUR's Up to Date. I'm Brian Ellison. There was a time not long ago when you probably didn't know what TIF even stood for. Probably you didn't need to. But today, tax increment financing is ubiquitous in Kansas City, from downtown to the crossroads, from the Northland to the south part of the city. It's in a lot of places, which its critics say is part of the problem. Perhaps it's not in the right places. Some credit TIF with supporting an unprecedented era of healthy development. Others say it is depriving schools and city services of much-needed income. KCUR contributor Kevin Collison has been covering development in Kansas City now for years. His latest in-depth look at the state of TIF in Kansas City is available now at kcur.org, and he's joining us this morning to give us a look at that story. Kevin, welcome to Up to Date.
Good morning, Brian. Glad to be here.
I'm glad you're here. So let's start out with a little refresher course, maybe. How is a TIF, how is tax increment financing supposed to work? What is it?
Well, the basic idea is to encourage investment in areas that have been overlooked by the private market. And in recent years, one of the primary areas that have been overlooked was downtown Kansas City. When we talk about downtown, I talk about greater downtown, which includes the crossroads and the River Market, et cetera. And then there's also the areas like the east side the near west side. Obviously, there is impoverished regions where investment has left the city long ago. And the point that these programs are all about is rewarding investment in those areas. And essentially what happens is, let's say a developer takes a look at a building that's valued at maybe $1 million, and it's half empty, it's been underutilized for many years, or it may be totally vacant. The building is paying taxes based on its current value, as it is before any kind of new investment goes on. So what the city does through TIF is allow an investor to keep 100% of the new value of the new taxable value of the building after, say, he invests maybe $5 million into renovating this building. So now we've got a $6 million project. The $1 million value is still paying in taxes.
So the city is, in theory, not losing any taxes.
Exactly. Exactly. It's an investment in future revenues that otherwise would not have occurred if the building had not been renovated.
But how long does this typically go on? So because the building now is worth considerably more, but the city's not getting that tax revenue.
Exactly. There are two different programs that use this kind of a property tax abatement. There's the basic property tax abatement, which can be 10 years for 100% and 15 years at 50%. That's the maximum. So after 25 years, the full taxable value of the property goes over to the city and the other jurisdictions, including schools, libraries, etc. Under TIF, it can last for about 23 years, and 100% of that property tax can be kept by the developer to defray the costs that went into, and it's usually a project that's pretty hard to do, and that's one of the reasons why private investment didn't occur to begin with.
So when did this start? What were some of the first projects to use TIF?
Well, some of the earliest ones that I know about date back to the early 1990s, when the firm DST, which is a major software financial firm here in town. They had a strong real estate arm, and they came into a downtown area along 11th Street back in the early 1990s and created a TIF, which allowed them to redevelop many buildings in that area that had been underutilized or vacant for their new offices. And the promise was that they were bringing in new jobs and they were renovating properties that had been falling apart or vacant for a considerable amount of time. One of the major TIFs that a lot of people in the city might know about is the Midtown TIF, which revitalized a block at Linwood and Main and created the Costco and the Home Depot there. Again, Center City needed to have good retail opportunities, and this was an opportunity to bring people in and produce services that had not been there before.
So when you look at projects like that, are they considered generally a success? Did they succeeded in bringing in the businesses, obviously. Is the city now reaping regular tax revenues from those projects, or will they?
The city does. I mean, again, the defenders of the use of incentives will point out that, number one, there was not any additional value to those properties to begin with. Number two, people continue, meaning the different taxing jurisdictions, to keep the existing property taxes that were already being paid there. So they're not losing any money. They're just not getting. And number three is that there's a lot of jobs that are created when we're talking about retail and office. There's a lot of sales tax that gets generated into the local local tax coffers. And then there's earnings tax of jobs being created, et cetera. So there are other taxes that are generated by these projects beyond the property tax that is forgone for the project itself.
Sure. Are any of those numbers disputed when we talk about that kind of growth that is coming apart from the property taxes?
There's definitely, disputes over whether the number of jobs that were originally promised actually materialize, whether the sales that were originally anticipated actually show up. It's not an exact science. You basically are taking your best. You've got folks who know a lot more about these things than I do as far as making projections go, and they do the best estimate they can provide.
So at some point, opposition starts to crop up to TIFs. People stop thinking, or maybe there were always people who didn't think they were a good idea, but we've heard more and more voices of folks saying this may not be such the best thing for the city.
We've definitely had controversy over the years. One of the major questions is when is an area actually doing well enough that the private sector can take care of these projects on their own and they don't need as much or any incentives at all to work? That's always a very difficult thing. And that's why the city, when they take a look at these proposals that come from developers at what they call the but-for analysis, in which but for this incentive, this project would not work.
Okay.
And that requires a lot of real estate analysis, various types of return on investment type things for investors, for developers. And those can be, very debatable. And also, you also have situations where they basically take a look at these. There are some people who are purists on this subject and say the city and the government should not be picking winners and losers in particular areas. That's a very philosophical discussion, which if you believe that the government should not be engaged at all in that, then you're going to question the entire basis of incentives.
Well, that's a key question, isn't it? Are the people who are opposed to TIF opposed to particular projects, or are they opposed to the whole principle of the government providing this kind of incentive?
Well, I think you've got a small share of folks who are opposed to the principle of the government being involved. That's your more libertarian argument. A lot of people just basically are skeptical that, investors won't otherwise come to these areas, particularly downtown and the crossroads, because they see activity, they see buildings that have been renovated that were empty before, and actually in some ways, when you have City Hall talking about how wonderful downtown is these days and other folks saying downtown is bustling these days, people say they believe them.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, okay, if it's bustling, then we really don't need to have that extra help that we had 10 or 15 years ago when downtown was in really, really rough shape and you had a lot of vacancies.
So TIFs could become a victim of their own success. Once they work well enough, you don't need them anymore.
Theoretically, ultimately the marketplace does get to a point where it doesn't need incentives. But folks say if you lift the hood underneath the rhetoric – that, it's a fine line between saying, oh, my God, the city's still falling apart, and, wow, the city's just on firing on all eight cylinders. You got to tone back the rhetoric because people do tend to sometimes believe what city officials and other downtown advocates are saying. Now, other folks will say, look, we've done better. We're doing much better than we were 10 or 15 years ago, but we still have a long ways to go.
Want to get our listeners' take on TIF. Are we a better city today because of tax increment financing? What makes you uncomfortable about it? What makes you support it? Give us a call at 816-235-2888. You can bring your questions for Kevin Collison about TIF in Kansas City. 816-235-2888. You can also tweet at us. We're at KCUR up to date. Kevin, who is carrying the banner of opposition today? Who are the most vocal critics of TIF? You talked to some of them in your story.
Well, I did talk to some of them.
Appears today on KCUR.org.
Right, right. Well, what was interesting is there have been critics for years about tax incentives, but it's generally been more of an in-house thing. City officials, former mayor Mark Funkhauser.
Yeah, not a fan.
Well, he was not a fan at all, and he was a steady critic of the use of the city's use of incentives, and he basically campaigned in part on his opposition to how the city had been using incentives. But what I found out is that what is kind of a new phenomena is what happened with BNIM architecture. BNIM, a very highly respected firm, they're based in downtown Kansas City right now. They've got about 100 people who work in their downtown office. They had been in the Power and Light building, and the Power and Light building is being renovated with the use of incentives into apartments. So they had to find a temporary place to go. So they went to the TWA building, another building in downtown that was renovated with the use of incentives. They wanted a permanent space, and a woman named Shirley Helzberg, a philanthropist and well-to-do.
Very well-known in the community.
Very well-known, and she's done some great work, my opinion, of bringing back buildings in the Crossroads area. She did the Webster House. She did the Vitagraph mm-hmm. building. Anyway, Shirley came and said, I've got this warehouse that is empty, BNIM came back and said, okay, great, we're interested in it. They came up with an idea for a very state-of-the-art type of environmentally friendly investment there, redevelopment of the property. They went through the city process and went through the Tax Increment Financing Commission process and were awarded, roughly a $13 million project, and they were seeking $5.2 million in tax increment financing, which, again, is money that would be paid back in the future revenues that came from it. The warehouse would continue to pay the existing values. Well, you had a combination of two things. You had some citizen activists led by a woman, Sherry Woolsey, who just got a hold of this and decided that this was not a good idea.
It's Jennifer Woolsey.
Jennifer, sorry, mm-hmm. yeah. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I don't have the story in front of me.
It's all right, I
should have brought it with me. Good, thanks for the catch. Anyway, Jennifer is a school parent, Kansas City School District, and she was unhappy about mm-hmm. the use of incentives. She'd gotten information that talked about how the school district was losing out on $20 to $30 million a year in revenues.
And is that true?
Well, again, it's how you look at this situation. That's $20 to $30 million that would not have been there if the projects had not been built. I mean, this is the key issue.
But it's money that, if it were taxed at the appropriate rates for its current value, that's money the school district would have.
Exactly, yes, okay. Yes. But again,
who knows?
If the buildings hadn't been done, right, the money wouldn't have been there. So anyway, and that is a huge issue. And that's where the city really feels like there's been some misinformation thrown out there about incentives, and that this is not cash going out from City Hall. This is the future tax revenues from a project that would not have been done, or projects, I should say. But that gets back into the crux of the issue, is that there are people who say, okay, well, here's money that's being diverted that should have gone to the schools. But on the other hand, the supporters of the project say that money wouldn't be there if the investments hadn't been made in those buildings.
Isn't that the hard part, Kevin? I mean, how do you know what would have been done without this level of financing? Or did the abatement deal have to be as rich?
Well, exactly. And that gets into the analysis, and that gets into what, you know, some of the questions are that are going on. But I don't think there's any question that the if the project wasn't done, those revenues wouldn't be there. Now, you can throw the dice and see, you know, whether or not people are going to follow up and do projects. But that's what happened here. So anyway, getting back to your original question, Jennifer launched a petition drive, and they were successful in getting the number of signatures, which are fairly low threshold here in Kansas City. It's 10% of the last mayoral vote, so she had to get 3,400 names. They got enough. BNIM said, look, we cannot wait. We're in a hurry here to get a decision made about our new headquarters, so they pulled out of the deal.
And we had Bob McDowell from BNIM come and talk with us on Up to Date the next day after they walked away.
Oh, now my catch, Steve McDowell.
Steve McDowell, excuse me. And they said there's a possibility they'll stay in Kansas City, but there's a possibility they won't.
Right. And I talked to Steve last week, and they've got four options they're looking at. One of them would be to actually find different space within the building they're currently at, the TWA building. The other options, not all of them are in Kansas City, Missouri. He wouldn't tell me what the other options are, but they do expect to make a decision soon.
816-235-2888 is the number to call to join this conversation about TIF in Kansas City. Lori is joining us from Kansas City, Missouri. Good morning, Lori.
Good morning.
What's your thought?
My thought is, when we talk about urban development and restoring the urban core, you often hear a term called connect the dots. and we look at the dot of Crown Center, we look at the dot of downtown, we look at the dot of the plaza, and our city would be much less robust if we'd not had the support of somebody like Jim Glover, who understood we needed a dot along that corridor for Costco and for Home Depot. And he really deserves tremendous credit for that. But it's not just about connecting big dots. There are also smaller dots. And I think of the BNIM building that Shirley Helzberg owns as a smaller dot. And so we need to think about revitalization almost like planting new grass, like zoysia plugs in certain areas. So I would just like to kind of shout out that Jim Glover did a wonderful thing, and I think we missed an opportunity for a smaller dot with the BNIM building. I'm driving, so I'm going to get off.
Okay, thanks so much for calling, Lori. I mean, there's big dots and small dots, as Lori says. Do TIFFs tend to focus these major focus their work on these major projects at the expense of smaller businesses that don't get this kind of help from the city?
Well, that's, you know, gets into a Brian, it's a good question in that the city will acknowledge that they're basically in a reactive mode. Developers come to them with project ideas. The city does help by laying the groundwork, for example, the streetcar, huge, huge amenity that the city has built, and that is encouraging development within its corridor. The city will do infrastructure improvement, but for the most part, a lot of it is a reactive thing. So somebody comes in and says, hey, I want to do a project for BNIM architecture at 18th or 9th, 17th in Baltimore. The city says, okay, show us how that's going to work financially for you. Show us where your shortfalls are, and we'll figure out, you know, what, if any, incentive is necessary to help make that deal work financially. You know, a lot of people say, well, why aren't they doing these things on the east side?
Right, because if we talk about blight, that's a word that's often
exactly,
used.
Yeah.
There are places that are more blighted than the crossroads.
Right. Yes. Mm-hmm. But the point is that also you need to have a developer that wants to do a project. Just because you say there's TIF available or there's property tax available, abatement available, doesn't necessarily mean you've got to, it's like the basic sand grain in the oyster. You've got to have the sand grain. You've got to have the initial investment, and then the city can wrap around those incentives to help make it work. But one of the things that I was told by city officials are they're having a real hard time still finding private investors, regardless of the availability of all these incentive programs, who are willing to go to some of these neighborhoods on the east side for a variety of reasons. And they are, though, the investors willing still to go downtown in the Crossroads area and other parts of the central city.
Let's take another call from Steve in Waldo. Steve, welcome to Up to Date.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
Question about TIF and the earnings tax. Since the earnings tax is basically taxation without representation, how do we justify not taxing some people who work in the city at the same rate as others? I mean, we're giving specific employees a break as well as businesses. Thank you.
I don't know that I understand that to be a comment about tax increment financing.
Well,
tax
increment financing, there are a couple of projects in which some of the earnings taxes are being allowed to be kept by the people that are doing the project
okay,
as a way to help
the jobs
subsidize
that,
a deal.
The jobs that come into the city.
New jobs,
mm-hmm.
Exactly. But for the most part, earnings tax is not really something that's part of TIF projects. You know, there are, again, a couple of examples where that happens, but most of the time it's sales tax, personal property tax, and the property tax for the overall real estate. But earnings tax, you know, anybody that works in the city pays that 1%.
Let's take one more call from Patrick in Lone Jack, Missouri. Good morning, Patrick.
Yes. Hello there. It seems to me if somehow you could de-link the TIF financing from the direct immediate effect that it has on the schools, then the lady that torpedoed this last one would have no ammunition. It's a good thing for us all if these things are built. It's just not good for the schools immediately. Can they not de-link that somehow and continue with the wise thing of making more real estate available for taxation?
So your suggestion, Patrick, is to abate the taxes for other things, but not for schools?
Yes, and one last thing. We can see the immediate effect of the TIF financing in that there's revenue, that there's tax revenue not going back to the city. But you could make an argument that if you took the people that came to this building that weren't there before and charted out their tax impacts on the city, you could put those two numbers up in the air and say, wow, I like having both these things. It's a good idea. Because I never hear of, well, this architecture firm would have contributed this amount of money. And it's a number that would probably chill out the opponents of the TIF idea.
Hmm. Interesting thoughts there, Patrick. Well, thanks for your call. Kevin?
Well, Patrick does raise a good point. And there have been some serious discussions about how, you know, the school district and perhaps other taxing jurisdictions might be able to get some of the payback on these projects a little sooner than having to wait 10 or 15 years in the case of a property tax abatement, or even 23 years in the case of a actual tax increment financing project. There are some discussions. It's called, when the schools and when the city gets the money on the existing value, it's called a payment in lieu of tax. It's a pilot. And there have been some discussions about accelerating the increase in the pilot payments that the school district gets, you know, other ways to try to help address at least some of those concerns.
Kevin, as you to put on your prognosticating hat or look into your crystal ball, where do you think we'll be in 5 years or for that matter, 30 years? Is TIF here to stay, or are we going to see its last gasps?
Oh, no. I think TIF is here to stay. I think what we've got here is a really kind of a new situation in which, you know, you've got a much more active citizenry. And if you take a look at the story, it was fascinating to see one of the major organizations that's also opposing the city's current earnings tax, the Show Me Institute, mm-hmm. which gets a lot of its funding from Rex Sinkfeld, is very involved in the whole battle over tax incentives as well. In fact, Jennifer went to a presentation by one of the representatives of the Show Me Institute, and that's where she picked up some of the information she used to justify her decision to go for the petition drive. So you've got
Crosby Kemper here in town.
Crosby Kemper is very involved with the Show Me Institute. He is actually the chairman of the Show Me Institute, and his other hat is he's the executive director of the Kansas City Library,
which is a taxing district,
and one that definitely, you know, has a skin in the game as far as these incentives go.
One last question, Kevin. You're working on more stories about tax increment financing and development in Kansas City. What else can we expect in coming months?
Well, I hope to take a look at some of the arguments about whether or not downtown, the Crossroads, the River Market have reached a point where they can function well in the free market. What projects may be out there being discussed for the east side of Kansas City? But I do think that Kansas City is going to be, very much involved. And, of course, this also goes on in the suburbs, which we can talk about in the future as well.
Very good. Well, we'll look forward to that. That's KCUR contributor Kevin Collison, who has a new story up online right now about TIFs in Kansas City. Kevin, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, you're very welcome. Glad to be here.